मुखं करोति वाचालं पंगुं लंघयते गिरिं यत्कृपातं वंदे श्रीगुरो दीनतारिणं परमानंदमाधवं श्रीचैतन्य ईश्वरं
हरे कृष्णा. सो हियर वी सी बर्हिषत्. ही विल बी हेंसफॉरवर्ड कॉल्ड एज प्राचीन बर्ही. एंड हियर देयर इज द मैरिज सेरेमनी दैट इज टेकिंग प्लेस ऑफ प्राचीन बर्ही एंड द ब्यूटिफुल यंग डॉटर of the ocean named Shatadruti. And here the description of Shatadruti is given, that she was decorated very, very beautifully with nice garments and nice ornaments to such an extent that she attracted even fire god Agni. So when I was reading this purport, so I could connect with the marriage of Rukmini and Krishna. So Rukmini Mangalam. So it is described that Rukmini Devi, she entered the temple of Girija, and she was worshipping. In fact, when she started from the palace, it is said that Rukmini Devi was going to the temple of Girija to worship the lotus feet of Girija, but in the mind she was meditating on the lotus feet of Krishna. And she was going very, very with a slow pace. She was walking towards the temple, and after the worship was done, she came out from the temple, and Shukadeva Goswami beautifully describes the beauty of Rukmini Devi at that time. And when she came out, so she was searching for someone, and we know whom she was searching for. So she was searching for someone, and in between, her hair would come in front of her eyes, and she was not able to see them. You know, she'll remove her hair, which was coming on her face. And when she was doing that, and when she was coming down from the temple, all the kings who had assembled, the entire assembly was there, because everyone knew that something very good is going to happen today. So Shishupal, instead of Shishupal getting married to Rukmini, someone else is going to come and kidnap. So normally, when a bride, she goes to the temple to worship, the Durga temple to worship. So at that time, so only the females will accompany, not the males. But here in this case, we see Rukmini's case, that the entire, all the kings who had come with their entire army, they all were going with Rukmini. I was just imagining how that situation will be, how that entire scene would be. And then Rukmini, she is getting down, and she is trying to, very, very, in a very shy mood, because she cannot look at all the kings. But now she is searching for a king of her life, so she has to look at all the kings. So she was searching and she was glancing at all the kings. At that time, the description says that all the kings looking at the beauty of Rukmini, and when she glanced on these kings, the kings fell flat physically, psychologically, emotionally, and along with them the weapons also fell down, whatever they were holding, to such an extent that when Rukmini saw Krishna, and when she started moving towards Krishna, started walking towards Krishna. Now everyone knew what she is doing. Everyone knew Krishna is standing there with his chariot. Everyone is seeing that Rukmini is walking towards Krishna, but no one could do anything at that time. only when Krishna left with Rukmini, yes, who? So only when Krishna left with Rukmini, with the chariot, quite a distance away, at that time all these kings realized something has happened, and then they started picking up all the weapons which had fallen down, and they started shouting at each other, "What were you doing? What were you doing?" So here it is described that even before Krishna subdued the enemies there, Rukmini by her beauty did the same. So we can understand how beautiful our mother Rukmini would be, in the marriage ceremony with Krishna. So in this way, we understand that Here, Prabhupada says that when it comes to marriage, the bride, I will read the exact line. According to the Vedic system, when a girl is married, she is very profusely and gorgeously decorated with costly saris and jewelry. And during the marriage ceremony, this is the process. So she is decorated very, very beautifully. And this is very much needed. Very much needed, according to what Srila Prabhupada is writing here. There are some nice purports which I found, because I am not the right authority to speak on such an intense topic which is here. So let Prabhupada speak. So I will just read out from translation purports of Srila Prabhupada. So Manu Samhita recommends that to keep a wife satisfied, a husband should give her some ornaments, because women are generally fond of home, ornaments, dresses, children, etc. In this way, the woman is center of all material enjoyment. So it is recommended that the desires of the woman should be satisfied, especially when it comes to the desire of Shringar, Alankar, all that items, all those paraphernalia should be provided so that she dresses herself very nicely. Why? We'll see that with time. Here, another point that Prabhupada is mentioning in one of the purport is, not only does the husband becomes magnanimous by begetting children, but by giving his wife ornaments, nice food and dresses, he keeps her completely under submission. So this is very, very important. Every husband should follow this. Such a satisfied wife will never give up the company of her husband. It is also recommended in one of the places that when the husband is out for some work, basically for the occupation, for the job, so when he is coming back in the evening, the wife should take care or should make sure that she takes bath and she decorates herself very nicely. Because when the husband comes back home, at that time, he wants to take the Sakshat Darshan of his wife. And when he is getting that Darshan, so it has to be a beautiful Darshan so that he forgets all the anxiety of the external world. And also at the same time, he remains in the fort of Grihastashram. So see, Vedic culture is very, very, very amazing. And all the sutras that our Vedic culture give are really very amazing. So when it comes to Grihastashram, the husband and wife should remain in that particular ashram. Now how to remain in that particular ashram, even when they might have attraction to other people outside, other opposite genders who are there? How can they overcome this attraction? So these nice points are given. So when it comes to husband, he should fulfill the desires of the wife by giving whatever she needs, especially the Shringar paraphernalia. And the wife should make sure that she uses all those paraphernalia to dress herself very nicely so that she holds the husband by her beauty, so that he does not get attracted to anyone else around. And here Prabhupada writes one very beautiful point. He says that every husband is certainly a great hero to his wife. I don't know if this is valid today. In other words, if a woman loves a man, that man appears very beautiful and magnanimous. Prabhupada writes a very important statement. He says, unless one becomes beautiful in the eyes of another, one cannot dedicate his whole life to another. I repeat, unless one becomes beautiful in the eyes of another, one cannot dedicate his whole life to another. So all those thousands of people who surrendered and dedicated their lives to Srila Prabhupada, you can imagine how beautiful Srila Prabhupada would be looking in the eyes of these great personalities, all the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Now, one nice thing that Prabhupada is mentioning here is that, as stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, men and women naturally get attracted to one another, and when they are united by marriage, that attraction becomes very strong. Being so strongly attracted, the bridegroom attempts to set up a nice homestead and eventually a good field for producing grains. Then children come, then friends, then wealth. In this way, the male becomes more and more entangled in the material conceptions of life, and he begins to think, this is mine and it is I who am acting. So some shloka which is very much related to this, very famous shloka which Prabhupada quotes very often.
Pumsaha striya mithuni bhavametam tayor mithoradaya granti mahuhu atho graha shetra sutapta vittair janasya mohoyam aham mameti.
So this says that pumsa striya mithuni bhavametam. The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this conception, which ties together the hearts of male and female, one becomes attracted to this body, home, property, children, relatives and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. There's a very strong purport which Prabhupada writes. It's very nice for brahmacharis to discuss. So here Prabhupada starts with, sex serves as the natural attraction between man and woman, and when they are married, the relationship becomes more involved. So in another place Prabhupada says this, that when male and female come together and unite in the jurisdiction of marriage, so their attraction becomes very strong. And when the child is born, the attraction becomes even more strong, even more becomes, that knot, which is called as Hridaya Granthi, that becomes even more hard and very difficult to, untie. So here Prabhupada continues where he says, that due to the entangling relationship between man and woman, there is a sense of illusion whereby one thinks this is my husband or this woman is my wife. This is called Hridaya Granthi, the hard knot in the heart. This knot is very difficult to undo simply to get a divorce. So simply to get a divorce, Prabhupada is getting this entire society's current situation, and he's putting it here. So a very nice point Prabhupada is making, that this Hridaya Granthi is so strong that even if the male and female, they separate, either in the last stage, that is Vanaprastha stage, or even when it comes to divorce, in any case, the man always thinks of woman and vice versa. Thus, the person becomes materially attached to family, property and children. Although all of these are temporary, the possessor unfortunately identifies with his property and wealth. So we can imagine that how strong this knot is. Once this knot is tied, it's very difficult to untie, very difficult to untie. And a nice thing mentioned for all the renunciants. So there might be a question, okay, so there is Hridaya Granthi when it comes to grihasthashram or when it comes to marriage, when male and female come together. But then even for renunciants, they're attached to so many things. They're attached to the temple, they're attached to their little possessions they have. Whatever, dhoti, kurta, nowadays mobile, laptop, whatever. So what about them? So Prabhupada makes a very nice point. He says, sometimes even after renunciation, one becomes attached to a temple or to the few things that constitute the property of a sannyasi. But such attachment is not as strong as family attachment. The attachment to the family is the strongest illusion. So very strong purport Prabhupada is giving here. And in the same context, Shri Prahlad Maharaj, he quotes the famous shloka. Tat sadhu manye asuryavarya dehinam sada samudvigna dhyam asadgrahat hitvatma patam grahamandakupam vanam gato yad dharimashrayetat. So here Prahlad Maharaj, he's addressing his father. O asuryavarya, O best of the demons, tat sadhu manye, you're asking me what is the best thing? Let me tell you what is the best thing according to me. Then he starts describing the same thing what Prabhupada is describing here. Prahlad Maharaj starts describing. He says, Tat sadhu manya asurya varya dehinam sada samudvigna dhyam asad grahat. Sada samudvigna dhyam. The intelligence is always bewildered. Sada. Why? Asad grahat. Because he is there in asad grahat, considering the temporary things to be permanent. Considering those things which are temporary, and with time anyways they'll go away, considering those things to be his own, mama mameti, this person is always bewildered. And then Prahlad Maharaj continues, he says, Hitvatma, hitva, give it up, giving up. Atmapatam. Now, atmapata is a word which talks about those things which put a stop to the process of self-realization. This is called as atmapata. So, atma or atma-realization or atma-gyan is basically about self-realization. But patam, which stops anything, is atmapata. Graham andakupam. So, who stops this? Graham andakupam. Here, Prahlad Maharaj is saying, the family, when it comes to, I'm not talking, this is not about devotees, this is about materialists. Shla Guru Maharaj, whenever he gives class on this, he makes it a point that he, you know, puts this line. This is not for devotees, this is for materialists. So when it comes to materialists, they are completely engrossed in material life, not understanding what is the goal of life, not understanding that why this human form is given, what is this opportunity, or why is this opportunity given to me. So without understanding this, the man gets completely entangled day in and day out, thinking about one's own family. How can I get this family? How can I help this family? And how can I give all the necessities to this family? And so on and so forth. And in one of the purports, Prabhupada writes, I'm not getting the exact words, where somewhat like this, where Prabhupada says that self... If someone remembers, please tell me. Self-proclaimed duties?
Self-created duties.
So that materialist would start thinking, oh, no, this is my duty to take care of this person, that person, my family. Oh, I have to give this, I have to give that, and so on and so forth. So in this way, we see that a materialist will completely get engrossed in the material life, thinking that this is my family and I have to take care of this family. And here Prahlad Maharaj very strongly is saying that such a family life, such a graha, is compared to andhakupa, blind will. Now what do you mean by andhakupa? What do you mean by blind will? So we don't see this in Bangalore, but in villages and other places we might see that there are some wells which are unused because of various reasons. And when it comes to the monsoon climate, monsoon season, so when it rains heavily, there are lots of creepers, you know, which will grow around the well. And the top surface of the well will get covered, you know, with all these lush green varieties of plants. And to such an extent that the land and the well, it will be almost on the same level. And no one can make out, you know, that there is a well here, deep, dark well. No, it's little water and some poisonous snakes and poisonous reptiles inside. So when it comes to the goats and other animals, they would keep, you know, eating various grass around. And without knowing that there is a well, they would come closer to the well, eating the grass, and they come closer and closer and closer, and finally they would come on the top surface of the well, and without their notice, they will fall down inside that well. And now, since the well is covered with so much of greenery around, no one can make out that someone has fallen inside. And with time, you know, the goat or, you know, whichever animal has fallen down inside that well will try to call out for help, but then no one can hear. And with time, that particular animal has to leave the body. So here, the same thing Prahlad Maharaj is saying, that when a person enters the so-called family life, what happens? He has to give up his body in that particular family life itself, because it's andhakupa, blind well, no one can save him from there. Obviously, except some preacher going for a house program. So maybe he can do that. So here, Prahlad Maharaj is recommending his father, hitva, giving up this particular andhakupa, vanam gato yad dharimashrayetad, go to vana, go to Vrindavan. Doing what? Taking ashray of Hari, dharimashrayetad. Now here in this purport, Prabhupada is saying that Agni, then Brahma, Lord Shiva, Indra, all of them are attracted by sex at any time. And we know different instances when it comes to Brahma. So he was attracted to his own daughter. Obviously, you know, lots of description is given that he ran behind the daughter and things like that, but Bhagavatam does not talk about that. Bhagavatam just says that he got attracted, mentally, he got attracted to his daughter, and then immediately he gave up that thought. And it's equivalent to giving up the body. So Brahma got attracted to his own daughter Saraswati. When it comes to Shiva, so he was agitated by Parvati. Indra, I guess we have lots of cases we need not discuss. And Agni here, one case is given. So he got attracted to Shatadruti, and previously he had got attracted to Shuki. So in this way, Agni got attracted. So such great personalities are getting attracted, to this sex desire. And what about us? We are mortal beings of this world and trying to overcome the sex desire. It's just a joke to try to overcome the sex desire. And Krishna very clearly mentions to Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, he says, Kama esha, krodha esha, rajoguna samudbhava, mahashano, mahapapma, vidhenam, iha vairinam. So here, Krishna is telling that Kama esha, krodha esha, rajoguna samudbhava, kama, lust, this is the reason, for all the misery. And lust is born out of the mode of passion. And when lust is not fulfilled, that transforms into vrat. And then he says, Mahashano mahapapma vidhenam iha vairinam. So he's saying that this lust is the greatest enemy of the entire world. Iha. Now, this word iha represents the entire material world. Iha vairinam. So in this way, we understand that when in the purport, Prabhupada writes that when a living entity comes in contact with the material world, what happens? The eternal love, the love of Godhead, the eternal love for Krishna, that gets transformed, perverted reflection, and that is transformed into lust in the association with the mode of passion. Or in other words, the sense of love of God becomes transformed into lust as milk in contact with sour tamarind is transformed into yogurt. So as soon as a living entity comes in contact with this material world, the mode of passion, immediately that love of Godhead which is there in the heart gets covered and lust gets manifested. And that is the reason we see that every single person, instead of saying person, I should say every single living entity gets attracted to the sex desire, every single living entity. In fact, starting from the worms, to Brahma, everyone becomes a victim of this desire of sex. In fact, when it comes to birds around, I happened to see a pigeon on the terrace. So I was just walking by and I was seeing that there was a female pigeon and the male pigeon around. So that male pigeon was trying to dance around the female pigeon. I was just wondering at that time, this is how the mode of passion acts. And obviously I left the place because I did not want to become that sage. What is that sage name? The one who was there in the water? Shaubari Muni. Shaubari Muni. So here we see that this sex attraction or the attraction between the opposite gender is so strong in every living entity. What to talk about just human beings? Because this is how this entire world is made. This was the desire of the living entity to enjoy, and Krishna has facilitated by giving this wonderful world which is made up of three modes of nature. And here Prabhupada writes, therefore lust is the enemy of the living entity, and it is the lust only which induces the pure living entity to remain entangled in the material world. In this purport also Prabhupada is saying that it is due to sex attraction that one remains in the material world and is obliged to accept different types of bodies. So if someone is there in this material world, then it's for sure that that person is there in this material world because of the sex desire which is there in the heart. What is sex desire basically? So sex desire is obviously to enjoy the opposite gender, that is one. And the other thing is to enjoy, you know, this material world, and in Prabhupada's term, to lord it over the material nature. So this enjoyment tendency, the self-centered tendency which is there, that is keeping the person in this material world. See, one thing has to be understood very clearly, that till the point one remains till the point one considers himself to be the center of his own life and want to be the enjoyer all the time, he has to remain in this world. Prabhupada says Purusha. So Purusha is the enjoyer, and Purusha is only Krishna, everyone else is Prakriti. But artificially we have covered ourselves with this artificial desire of enjoying, and Prabhupada says that everyone in this world, and you see, when a Prakriti, maybe we can consider some example, or a female start behaving like a male, so they will not be comfortable, because it's incompatible. The body which is given by the Lord is a male, and he starts acting like a female, he will be very uncomfortable, very, very uncomfortable. It will not be natural, and the entire society might not accept, you know, this artificial dressing of the person, artificial behavior of the person. And he will not be happy at all in any case. Similar is our situation. We being Prakriti, we being the entities to be enjoyed by Krishna, when we start acting like Purusha, we will always remain uncomfortable in our situation. That is the reason we are always unhappy in this material world. Always. Whatever little happiness is there here and there, that's flickering happiness, no doubt about that. But then the cause of suffering, the cause of distress in this material world is this, that a Prakriti trying to artificially become the Purusha. This is a very, very abominable thing that happens to a living entity as soon as a living entity lands up in this material world. So one thing that has to be done, or one thing that we all need to do, is transform this desire, the selfish desire of enjoying this material world, to the selfless desire to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now it's almost like saying, this is my favorite analogy which I give in most of the classes, it's almost like saying that one should become dry staying inside the swimming pool. This is what Bhagavatam expects. You are there in this material world, a place which is governed by three modes of material nature, and anyone who is there in this material world will be lusty, and the expectation given by Srimad Bhagavatam is the person should become a selfless servant of Krishna, giving up all the selfish desires to enjoy this material world. Now we have to understand our situation. You know, our situation is really very, very precarious, you know, very abominable. Now we have been tied. The entire existence of ours is tied. We don't have much independence. The three modes of material nature have tied us, our past samskaras have tied us. You know, we have been tied in various ways. So we are not independent. Only the desires are there. But even when it comes to desires, they are governed by the situations we are put in. So if we properly analyze, we are bound to a very, very great extent. And here we are expected to untie, you know, all these things. This is not possible, impossible. Right? The only hope for all of us is dependence of Sri Guru and Gauranga. There is no other hope. This has to be realized, you know, by each and every living entity, especially human beings and especially devotees. Right? So we have to realize this point, that we have to depend on Sri Guru and Gauranga for their mercy. And when their mercy flows, yes, then it is possible that we will be out of the clutches of Maya. We will be able to break the cycle of birth and death. Or else it's very, very difficult, not possible. We are tied in this material world and we'll remain tied in this material world forever. We will be stuck in the cycle of birth and death forever if we don't get that mercy of Sri Guru and Gauranga. So the devotees, the only thing that devotees should do or is expected to do is strive, you know, to attract the mercy of Sri Guru and Gauranga by doing, you know, whatever, you know, they have instructed.